This is The Trail from Hope, Chapter 1.
We live in a nice two-story farmhouse in West Virginia. Now, West Virginia was not where any of us were born, but after Mother died and the bomb started to drop, Dad thought it would be the safest place for my brother and me. We were driving along one day when Dad pulled down a dirt road and we pulled up to this vacant house. It seemed like fate because no one had lived there in years, and it was secluded and had a national forest behind it, so deer and other game would be plentiful. I don't remember arriving at the house, but it has been my home for as long as I can remember. It was a couple months before my dad met our neighbors. They were good, down-to-earth people and let us in on the secret that the small town of Hope was still thriving. There was fertile ground for farming, everyone was sharing, and the most important thing was that the one gas station in town was filled the day before the apocalypse. There was gas for generators to keep the town running as if it was all fine, and it was. Mrs. Johnson's bakery provided folks with bread. Mr. Hank's butcher shop provided meat and paid anyone who brought meat in vouchers. My brother and I would take my father's kills to Mr. Hank's as children to get vouchers for bread, gas, and for treats from Mr. and Mrs. Belvin's. Now, vouchers were not money, but better. Everyone who had a trade or goods worked for vouchers. It was better than money because it transferred for actual goods that everyone needed. I had seen paper money, but in this time it was either vouchers, trade, gold, or silver. No one accepted anything else. I grew up in this town. My younger years consisted of me, my little brother, and my father playing in the yard. I helped him till the garden and weed it, and he would teach me how to butcher the deer, rabbits, and squirrels that he brought in. I spent a lot of time playing with my little brother while my dad was out hunting. He not only hunted for us, but for the whole town. As a child, it was my favorite time of the month when I would pull my little wagon of meat with my dad carrying my little brother on his shoulders as we made our way to the market. It was about a 30-minute walk down our road to get to the edge of town. When I was younger, I could never pull the wagon the whole way, and soon my brother and I would be sitting on top of a tarp, on top of the deer meat, in the wagon as our dad pulled us. Market day was always a day of wonder for me. Every month we would meet with the other townspeople in the bank parking lot next to the gas station. Everyone called it a farmer's market. It apparently had been happening for decades and had only changed a little after the end. It was always exciting because I knew that it was time to see the other children in town and play with them. As I got older, though, I was the only one pulling the wagon into town twice a month to trade deer meat, onions, and radishes. We grew a lot on our little homestead, but most we kept for ourselves. Corn and potatoes were our main crops, and we grew a lot of them. We did take some to the market, but my dad always said that those crops, along with any apples we could gather from the hills, were food we could store for the long term in our own cellar. And so we should only take things to the market that were worth a higher value. After all, everyone grew potatoes, but they were never at the market for sale. Potatoes were a staple of everyone's meal in our town. Potatoes provided almost every nutrient that the human body needs, and so everyone grew them. Some of the older ladies would even remark on how special their mashed or scalloped potatoes were during the market. Each had some special ingredient or something to make it the best. Our small town even had an annual potato tasting competition that was highly regarded, and each of the top three contestants got some varying type of deer meat prize. The town didn't have a lot of people, but each year there would be almost 80 people offering potato recipes to be the best. There had even been some scandals in the potato judging in the past. Our meat, though, was always highly prized. Our deer jerky was also sought after, along with the occasional mutton. Our eggs would always be gone rather quickly. It seemed that most of the folks could not keep the foxes or hawks from getting to their chickens. Everyone hunted. But no one was as successful as my dad. Even in the long winters, he seemed to be able to find a deer or two. The thing was, that there was actually an abundance of deer in the mountains here. I had seen the herds. They mostly kept to the high hills and fields far away from town, but they were there. Most of the townspeople were in their senior years and couldn't hunt. As for the others, they seemed to be too lazy or unwilling to trek up the hills and down the valleys and up the hills again to find the deer. It had probably been harder when I was young, and my father had to back a full deer out himself, but now I was hunting with him, and so it was a bit easier. As for the goats and chickens, my father had traded for a chicken or goat here and there for years to build up our small herd. From as far back as I could remember, we had a small herd. There were a few families with fathers the age of my dad, but they only brought deer to their families every so often, and mostly survived on potato stew. I once asked him why no one had as much meat as us, and his reply was simple. Those other men are capable of hunting deer, caring for chickens, raising goats, but they are either lazy and feel the time needed to do so as a waste, or they are not very good hunters, he said with a wink. Can't you help them? I had asked. I would be happy to, but if I were able to help them too much, they would get lazy and rely on someone else to provide their food. Father or mother, as long as you can provide for your family, that is enough. Some can do more and some can't even do that. I try and help people that cannot because I am capable of helping people. Natalie was confused at first, and her father could see that. After a pause, he continued. People that try to provide but simply cannot are the people that I help. I give food to Mrs. Laundrie because she lost her husband 2 years ago and does not have the ability to provide for her 2 kids. Old Jethro, on the other hand, spends most of his time drinking his hooch. His wife watched over his chickens and a goat for a year before she died last spring. Since then, her chickens have been killed by coyotes, and he sold the goat for a hammock. Now he comes and begs every week when the market is closing down for scraps. He had the ability to at least care for his late wife's chickens, but chose to be a drunk instead. And, as drunk as he usually is, his hooch seems to be good. Everyone thinks he has a large moonshine still somewhere up in the hills. He could sell that, but he doesn't. So he's a bum by choice, and those people I hold no sympathy for. Natalie thought about that for some time and came to the same conclusion. Weak people are always going to be weak, and giving them a free pass is just not the way. What about the families that say they cannot find deer or grow gardens?
Well, her father answered, they have been getting by somehow for this long, so they are probably relying on the church without any thought to what others sacrifice.
Natalie looked at her dad. We give donations to the church, so are others taking advantage of it? Her father just nodded. So why do you work harder to help people, Dad? Natalie asked. Her father bent and kissed her on the forehead.
It's what your mother would have wanted.
I smiled at Dad and turned away as a tear came to my eye. I do not remember much about my mother, but it always made me tear up a little the few times Dad ever mentioned her. I was very young when she died, and I do remember times of happiness and of her holding me and giving me Eskimo kisses. Those memories would always make me tear up and smile at the same time. We used to be a family before the end, and sometimes I would wish for those times again, even though I couldn't remember much. I usually couldn't even remember what my mother had looked like most of the time. In my memories, I could only picture a blurry face with auburn hair draped over her shoulders. Every so often, I could actually picture what she actually looked like, but the images would be blurry. Again, and almost instantly, I could never hold on to what her face looked like. I know Dad missed her terribly, but tried to keep myself from asking about her too much because of the pain I saw in his eyes every time he mentioned her.